Welcome to Bunta Vista episode 165. I looked that up right before we started.
God damn it. Correct. Yes, it's 165. Thank you.
Episode 165. I am Andrew and I'm here at a hostage negotiation. Being the caring and loving members of the police that we are here to do the right thing. Glasses fogging up, holding a bullhorn in one shaking hand while he Googles reverse psychology on his phone, it's Theo.
Hey, so just be kind, okay? If you don't have any feedback that's positive, just, you know, I'm trying my best.
Are you saying that to me or to the hostage station?
I'm saying this directly into the bullhorn.
Oh, boy. Well, you keep at it, buddy. You know, maybe post something on Reddit, see if you can get any replies over there. Mm-hmm. Maybe a Quora post on how to resolve this situation. Would have it sorted out nice and quickly. Over in the SWAT van, where she should be watching the video feed from the security cameras inside, but instead she's watching Game 7 of the Stanley Cup playoffs, where the Islanders hold a 2-goal lead over her beloved Flyers, it's Lucy.
Oh, that's meta. Don't like this. Don't like everyone knowing that that's what I'm doing right now. Listen, I don't negotiate.
Well, you're not supposed to be doing that in the van, to be fair.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. Whatever.
Is this more of a situation where if Game 7 doesn't work out, we're going to have two people up there that we're trying to talk out?
Mm-hmm, that's exactly right.
Okay. And inside the building, rappelling down through the ceiling to murder the hostage taker from behind, only to wind up upside down with his dick and balls tangled very tightly in the ropes, it's Ben.
I would be embarrassed about this if it wasn't exactly the sort of thing that I was into. This is actually a wonderful outcome for me. I'm feeling sexually gratified and I'm about to fucking murk this fool.
Yeah, hanging upside down, face turning bright red, big smile.
Imagine if this was something that happened in every Tom Clancy novel. Like, it's the thing that he just tried to shoehorn in every time.
It's like, it's not like all those real incidents with Navy SEALs where they would go, hey, we're going to drop you 500 meters offshore next to this cliff, and then they all just drown. Which has happened a bunch of times, apparently.
Well, they should stop doing that.
It yeah. Sounds like a bad idea.
Have you seen that the guy from SEAL Team 6 who is, like, credited with... he's really specific with his wording. He says that he put a bullet in Osama bin Laden, but doesn't say that he killed him, which is very confusing. But he's very, very active on social media as like a MAGA influencer type guy. just fucking like, you'd think maybe, you know, took out America's Most Wanted or at least was there at the time. You probably don't need to do little hashtag games and stuff. You can probably just like live out the rest of your days without that. It's so weird.
Yeah, extremely... surely your existence would be just going from bar to bar, getting free drinks for the rest of your life.
Just being like, oh, by the way.
Hey, yeah, I put a bullet in Bin Laden, so...
Enjoying your PTSD for the rest of your life.
Yeah, yeah. He did that, he posted a photo of himself on like a Delta Airlines flight.
Right.
Without a mask, and just posted it with the caption, I'm not a pussy, and then immediately got kicked off the flight.
Didn't they ban him or something?
I hope so.
They did.
Didn't his wife, like, ask him to take the post down or something as well?
Yeah, something like that. He was like, I took it down because my wife said so. Respect.
And then his, like, response to it after that happened was like, thank God the flight in to kill Osama bin Laden wasn't Delta. Like, I don't understand what the significance of that would be. But
and you also, didn't your helicopter crash?
Yep, and it wasn't even like struck by enemy fire. They just hit a wall.
It rules that you can go online and this, like, there is just this beaming into your brain and there's nothing you can do about it.
You can just log off, but you can't really do that. Nothing none of us will.
Can do about it.
There's absolutely no action you can undertake to remove yourself from the situation. It is kind of good, though, that, like, you know, on the whole, cyberbullying probably bad. Kids at home, if you're listening,
especially
please
if
keep
it's
that
on
in mind. But it is good that you can, like, you, a person of not much, not you particularly, Theo. I mean, people generally, you don't have to be a famous person, you don't have to be anything. But if you get the perfect reply, you can force the guy that put a bullet in Osama bin Laden to read a tweet where you call him a fucking idiot, which is really beautiful. It gets this real, like, egalitarian approach to communication in the world, where if you own someone just enough, it'll be forced to go to the top of the replies and they'll have to see it. It's really quite beautiful.
You'll have to see it. I don't know who looks at like the last 10 years and says, I'm going to be Chris Kyle too. Like, the whole Chris Kyle thing didn't seem to work out that great. He's someone who went around afterwards going, hey, remember all those people I domed? No, this guy is doing I'm the guy who shot Osama bin Laden. No. It's no good. Chris Kyle, the guy that everybody remembers as the dude who made up everything. Everything that he claimed to have done. Clearly made up that entire thing. And I suspect that that's the same with this guy.
Probably.
Maybe clipped Osama's ankle as somebody else was shooting him directly in the forehead. And he was like, it still counts. Just I whispered to himself.
While Osama was busy playing a 64 emulator, didn't even know he was in the room.
So, you know, we're all good. Good police, like they all are. What's going on with the police in Queensland, Ben, who I believe you personally trained?
Yes, that's true. I didn't really want to talk about what my day job is on the podcast ever, but I'm the guy that trains Queensland police.
Oh, boy.
So this is not a funny story. I'm probably just going to put that little bit of preamble here. This is something that has been unfolding for a very long time, but it's somehow gotten even worse. So this is a story from The Guardian. A Queensland police officer who leaked address of domestic violence victim has conviction overturned. A Queensland court has overturned a suspended jail sentence and conviction handed to a police officer who hacked into a confidential computer system and leaked the address of a domestic abuse victim to her violent former partner. So this happened quite a while ago, but it's now just gone back to the courts and he's had it overturned. Because apparently any form of justice on this will be just too much. Senior Constable Neil Punchard pleaded guilty to 9 counts of computer hacking last year and was initially sentenced to 2 months prison, wholly suspended. On Tuesday, the Queensland District Court set aside those penalties, ordered Punchard to instead complete 140 hours of community service and determine that no conviction be recorded. Punchard was stood down from frontline duty in 2018 and formally suspended in 2019 on full pay. The classic cop move.
Mm. To punish you will be having a holiday.
Congratulations, and I hope you learn your lesson. The successful appeal and lack of recorded conviction may mean police are now unable to sack him. In 2014, Punchard accessed 2 separate police computer systems to attain the address of a woman and other details he sent to her estranged husband, his childhood friend. The recipient of the text message would later be convicted of domestic violence offence. He threatened to kill his former wife and strap bombs to their children. Just tell her you know where she lives and leave it at that, lol, Punchard wrote to his friend after sending the address. In another message, he said, the police will contact you if they want to speak to you. Then you give them my name. That is your get out of jail free card.
Fucking
wow.
Hell.
It's just right out there.
It's right
the
out
quiet
there,
part
right?
Loud.
In his decision, District Court Judge Craig Chowdhury said he took into
Craig
account...
Craig Chowdhury.
He took into account Punchard's age, 54, and his likelihood of gaining other employment if sacked from the police service.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. It's funny because, like, you would assume that the types of people making this sort of decision were quite conservative socially.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't the whole thing with conservative governments these days that they're like, we want elderly people to have the dignity
of working,
of continuing to work at Bunnings until they are 75 so that we can stretch the pension out a bit further.
Oh, look, please. I'm sure there's no security company in Australia that would happily hire a cop that had domestic violence issues against his name. There was no specific evidence before me that a conviction would result in the appellant's dismissal from the police service, but that was the implication made by the solicitor for the appellant in the court below.
So it wasn't even like, you know, proof to anybody's satisfaction. No. It was just like there was a bit of a vibe. There was a vibe.
There's a vibe that he might get fired from the police, a place where he definitely should not be working.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, it's safest to keep him with all the other police where they can keep an eye on him. Make sure that he doesn't do anything else bad.
Keep him honest.
Logically, a conviction for a serious offence would result in an officer's dismissal.
Yes,
yep.
It would.
Yeah, you would hope so.
You would really hope so.
Huh.
The judgment said there was, quote, no evidence put before the court to indicate that Punchard was aware of any allegation of domestic violence, and that the officer had claimed he checked whether any order was in place before acting. So they're saying that he's gone, oh, well, there isn't a DVO on the books yet, although there will be one in time. But he's also sending text messages saying, fuck her up.
Tell her you know where she lives.
And then when you get in trouble, I will get you off the hook because I'm a police officer.
And that's how the law works.
He should have covered his tracks by sending some text messages that said, hey, here's the location of your wife who I don't know anything about, the reason you can't find her. Your wife who you have misplaced, you know?
This is bleak.
It's very bad. And this is only half of it. In deciding not to record a conviction, Chowdhury also took into account the serious nature of the offences. The Punchard had already been disciplined by the police service. The Punchard had some symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder at the time. And his, quote, otherwise good character attested to by referees, including senior police officers.
Oh, cool. Very the other cool. cop said he's a nice guy. He must be one.
Oh, fuck me.
All the other domestic violence guys said that I'm good.
So, the Guardian did another follow-up article on this, which had a few more details. The officer, Senior Sergeant Neil Punchard, suggested in text message that his childhood friend should, quote, let loose on Julie and, quote, fuck her over. Text messages exchanges show Punchard suggested he could turn up unannounced to one family law hearing, quote, and see Julie shit herself with me there. Punchard appears to have thought it was funny when he sent a home address to Ronald. This is the name of, well, a pseudonym they're using for her former husband. Just tell her you know where she lives and leave it at that, lol, he wrote in a text message, discovered on an old phone 2 years later. I await the email and her reply, lol, she will fucking explode, lmao.
How old are these guys? Jesus Christ.
In another message, he said, I have completed an email draft to send to the bitch that will hopefully make her shit herself. So I want to go over it with you before I send it to you. So, you know, sort of maybe shows that his intentions were not benign.
I wouldn't say that they're good.
Just a bit. But, of course, it's okay because the police really cracked down on this guy. Continuing from The Guardian here, police initially took internal disciplinary action against Punchard. His pay was docked roughly $10 a week for a year.
Oh, it's so good and normal.
Police said he had to drop down from 5 gigabytes to 3 gigabytes on his mobile plan.
They decided to keep the matter in-house and not to pursue criminal charges for computer hacking. That's very nice of them.
Well, they took care of it.
Yeah, they took care of it. Police twice lost CCTV footage allegedly showing Ronald committing acts of family violence.
Jesus Christ, come on.
After the first instance at a McDonald's restaurant in Brisbane, Julie had confirmed with staff that the footage could be saved. Police later told her it could not be recovered.
Fascinating.
The second time, police taped over evidence of Ronald allegedly confronting Julie at a courthouse. When she complained about the bungle to an officer designated to handle her case, he told Julie not to contact him again about her petty domestic violence matter. Jesus. An audio recording of the conversation made by Julie was played on national television. Police ended an investigation because they could find no evidence about the exchange.
God almighty.
This fucking sucks.
Hey, but it's okay, because one of the cops tried to stick up for her. An officer who gave evidence in the tribunal in support of Julie, Lynn Jones, subsequently alleged she was targeted for reprisal disciplinary action, including a misconduct charge for failing to wear her police hat. So one cop breaks ranks, and then they immediately just pile on that other cop. That's fucking awesome.
Cool stuff. Fuck cops.
It's just insane how much of, like, the shit everyone knows that cops do, they can make it perfectly explicit, and everyone's still like, oh, you know.
Gotta respect them.
Yeah.
One bad apple, et cetera, you know? Like, the thing I keep thinking every time I see this, because there was also an update not too long ago about a story that we spoke about on here ages ago, which was about a disability pensioner getting, like, a wellness visit from a fucking SWAT team, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And it was, like, 6 or 7 cops who pulled this guy out of his house onto his front lawn and collectively beat the shit out of him with truncheons, pepper sprayed him, punched him in the face. After pepper spraying him, like, washed the pepper spray off his face with a high pressure hose, laughed to each other while they were doing it about how much he likes it, all that kind of thing. And their case finally got resolved with a judge choosing not to record a conviction against the, I think, two of the cops out of the six or seven of them who got charged with assault. And they said, we'll find you guilty of assault but not record a conviction, which is cool. And yeah, it just... And even during that case, the judge was saying to them, because they had continued to plead innocent the entire time, the judge was saying in their remarks, you have shown, like, no remorse about this at any point. You have not seemed to acknowledge that you did anything wrong or that you massively abused your powers. You have not offered any kind of apology to this person for what has left them very fucked up over time, you know? Yeah, the big takeaway for me over and over again, as it should be for all of us, is that there is no circumstance in which the cops will side with you, a normal member of the public, over other cops.
No.
Fuck instead, cops. We'll do this. If there is anybody who does side with you, we will drum them out of the police force for some made-up rules about their hat.
We have heard that there are some good apples here, and we're doing our best to
get rid of them. Sort that out.
Anyway,
cool. That's a good feel-good story to start
with. Nice fun story for us, Ben. Do you have any funner stories?
I can't believe you put that on me. That seems unbelievable.
Look, yeah, I told you I was struggling this morning. It's Father's Day. I'm allowed to have a little Father's Day.
It is Father's Day. Happy day to all the dads out there.
Thank you.
I've got a message. Hey to all the daddies. I've been asked to read that out.
By whom?
Read the rest of the message, please.
I can't read that on air.
That's right.
I do have a more fun story here, and it's sort of a dad story, almost. I don't want to be kind of gender essentialist here, but I do think that boating is a very dad activity. This is and hopefully we can change that. You know, I'd love for it to be just as much a mum activity in the eyes of society. This is a story from The Guardian. Multiple boats sink in Texas lake at pro-Trump water parade.
Oh, that is a feel-good story.
Isn't it? A parade of boats in Texas celebrating their support for Donald Trump ended in disarray when multiple vessels got into trouble on apparently choppy waters, leading to several sinking and a slew of distress calls being made to rescue officials. Multiple media reports described a chaotic scene on Lake Travis near the state capital of Austin, when a procession of boats waving Trump flags and banners motored over the waters, but then got into potentially serious trouble. Videos of the event circulating on social media showed several boats being swamped by waves and sinking as frantic passengers jumped into the water. The Travis County Sheriff's Office received its first call for help relating to the event just after noon, and multiple agencies quickly moved to assist people. So far, no injuries have been reported, according to the New York Times.
This is a nice bit of karma, this story, because I don't know if anybody saw the video from a different Trump boat parade from several weeks beforehand. But basically, they do just get together in these big groups and then just churn on down the river wherever they are. And they were, like, sinking unrelated people's boats because there's, like, so many of them so close together.
Yep.
Barreling along, that they're just causing, like, this massive swell.
Yeah. And they're doing it in quite narrow areas as well, so you're getting all the waves reflecting back from the shore.
Yeah, and there's just, like, a local family who was not part of the parade who had their boat, like, you know, near the shore and just got sunk. Just got all this wash over the sides, and then their boat just went under. It's like, cool, thank you. Thank you, boat parade. Parade of boats is still a very funny concept to me.
It seems... you know how, like, it's impossible to pin down, but the way Trump refers to things and uses language is always just, like, slightly off.
Big, like, beautiful boaters?
I love my boaters, you know? I love my boaters so much. It's just, like, not quite right in a way that I'm like, you just... It's not it. You're not saying it correctly, and I don't understand what it is that you're doing wrong.
What do you think it is about the boaters specifically that appeals to him? Because in my mind, it's kind of like it's kind of like some weird misguided understanding that he has of it's something that he can look at and picture that's like a working class thing that's happening. It's a working class activity, right? Somehow, yeah. Despite boating. The fact that all these people are piloting boats that I could 1000% not afford. They all look like boats that would cost you a pretty penny. Mm. And then they all get out there and go, we love our big wet boy.
But then big Trump. It turns out that they are the big wet boys because their boat capsized. The lead image for this that the New York Times used for their story is amazing. It's just like a family in like a smallish like center console boat that is being swamped by enormous waves while they're all still holding their drinks, trying to keep them balanced.
Oh, that's amazing.
It's very satisfying to look at. And it's like there's a couple of videos going around at the moment, and it's one of those things where it's objectively funny because no one is getting hurt. Like, it's all a very slow capsizing that's taking place. Mm. There are people in these speedboats where, like, just enough water has gone over the back that they've started to fill up a little, they've started to get lower, then more water is coming and whatever. So, they're surrounded by dozens of boats of people that are absolutely fine, and they're just standing in these, like, $55,000 boats being like, I guess this is... And that's... Okay, should we grab our stuff? Oh, okay. And then they're just vaguely swimming over to a nearby boat. It's just, it's so good. There is an unbelievable turnout for that event, though. Like, I saw a photo where someone had, like, done a big panorama of it, and it is, like, an unbelievable amount of people went, which is why this went so badly. It's very strange, but good on them, you know? They had a go.
That's a cool type of... like rally or parade, if you will, where the better your attendance is, the worse it's going to go for everybody.
True. Apparently, there was another one of these. I think it was at a lake in Oklahoma, maybe, where they had to call it off because they were having exactly the same problems, which is fun. Just go slower. You know, ease back on the throttle, guys. You don't have to fuck everyone up.
I like this quote from Trump.
Yeah, it's funny.
Trump himself has even spoken out in support of these rallies. I just wish I had time. I'd get on one of those boats and I'd be carrying a flag also.
I bet you would.
Just wish I had time for it.
I wish it's I had the busy. Time to boat. See, he's, you know, because he's a classic rich guy. Has he owned a... like a super yacht or anything at any point?
He'd have to, right?
I wouldn't be shocked if he had a problem with boats.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like
well,
scared
he does
of water
sharks.
Or something?
He's on record hating sharks.
He hates them so much.
Oh.
And where are you likely to encounter a shark?
In the ocean, generally.
Oh, no. He has definitely owned a super yacht. The
but
Trump Princess.
Oh.
See, the problem with like Trump on a yacht is that all I can imagine is him on the yacht inside the cabin. He's not out on the bow or anything. He's not holding onto a railing and letting the salt water splash his face. He's inside below deck in a suit and tie, and he is standing up.
He's swaying very gently to
counteract
the motion
of the
boat.
He's scared of the ocean, and he's correct to do so.
Yeah, you know how he has that like crazy forward lean on his stance? He's just standing up like that.
That's why he can't stand on the upper deck.
Standing like that on the boat as it moves around the water, his head remains perfectly stationary, but the rest of his body just moves with the boat.
Can I read you a little quote here from the website Boat International?
I would love that.
Of course.
A certain level of quality. That is the phrase that Donald Trump returns to again and again to explain why he bought Adnan Khashoggi's 86-meter yacht Nabila. And an explanation is needed. After all, Trump doesn't water ski or go in for swimming in a big way, and he's always tried to avoid the sun. As a matter of fact, he has never owned a big boat before. He doesn't even particularly like boats. Exactly. I'm not into them, he says with a shrug. I've been on friends' boats before and couldn't get off fast enough.
Exactly. It does not strike me as somebody who... It's all far too out in the elements for him, I think.
Diesel fumes.
Yeah.
Even you gotta walk down to the pier to get on the boat, you know?
That's true.
You can't just walk in
through. Just imagine him, like, stepping off a pier into, like, the boat that's taking him out to his boat. just be like, oh, it's a great visual.
So you can imagine him liking planes a lot more because he's such a... He's also like a big clean freak, isn't he?
He is, yeah. Big germaphobe.
Big germs guy and like, yeah, the ocean is one big toilet.
Big germs guy.
Big... In the pocket of big germ. Oh, boy. Yeah, no one wants to fall off a boat and die. if I were to fall off a boat and die, though, in the interest of keeping it real, which is what's happening to all of these people at this rally, they've decided to go out and keep it real for Donald Trump. Things have gone the way they've gone. But if I were to die in the service of keeping it real, I would also want my funeral to keep it real.
I see where we're going.
Thank you. Thank you for acknowledging this. I saw this article this week and was just extremely tickled by it. This is from ABC Sunshine Coast, which I'm assuming is the same outlet that reported on like the guy getting in the car wash last week.
Yes, absolutely. Probably. Great team of people up there at the ABC Sunshine Coast.
Oh, I was concerned about the future of schoolies. So
that's the Gold Coast, but close enough.
Yeah, well, they're all a kind of coast.
They're the same thing. Sunshine, gold, they're about the same word. So
yeah, very similar colours.
Best not to think further on it.
This is so unbelievably disrespectful, but fair enough.
We're all familiar with the colour of sunshine.
It's gold.
Sunshine Coast, good. Gold Coast, bad. That's basically, that's the crucial distinction.
I mean, they're the same place, so that doesn't really make any sense.
If you can picture the Sunshine Coast as sort of the left cheek, and the Gold Coast is sort of the right cheek. And you've got a big, beautiful Brisbane right in the middle.
And they that clap. They clap on Brisbane.
That quote from, I think it was Billy Connolly, who went to Brisbane one time, had a really bad experience, then subsequently just kept saying that if the world needed an enema, they'd insert it in Brisbane.
Rude, but okay.
Yeah, seems very disrespectful.
I do think, to be fair, that it's a powerful move to go somewhere exactly once, have a bad time, and then just like walk around telling people that that's what that place is like, as if as if every single day in history in that location has just been a bad day for everyone who lives there. You know?
Billy Connolly, you could not be more wrong. You are cancelled.
Paid for by the Brisbane Tourism Board.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You would work for them, though.
I had to do some work with a bunch of people from Tourism Queensland, and it was fucking awful. It was heinous. I had such a horrible time. PR people. Not a fan.
Going in on Queensland now, I guess.
I mean, I love the state still, just not the people paid to represent it to the rest of the country.
So anyway, ABC Sunshine Coast. Coffin confessor Bill Edgar paid to gatecrash Queensland funerals and speak up for the dead. Now, something about this story really, really tickled me. Bill Edgar has, in his own words, quote, no respect for the living.
In his own words.
Yeah, this guy doesn't care. He's fine. Instead, his loyalty is to the newly departed clients who hire Mr. Edgar, known as the Coffin Confessor. Oh! You know, spooky noises. To carry out their wishes from beyond the grave. I think they just wrote it down, you know. Mr. Edgar runs a business in which for $10,000, I love this as a flat fee. But
that's a lot.
I guess you can't really do like a sliding scale depending on the type of revelation.
Or what type of ghost it's going to be. Is it hostile?
Yeah. Revealing a second family costs like twice as much, you know. He's engaged by people, quote, knocking on death's door to go to their funerals or gravesides and reveal the secrets they want their loved ones to know.
$10,000. You could just ask your friend to do this.
Yeah.
I'm going to get this guy to go to my funeral and, like, reveal my Funko Pop collection to my wife. You need to break down the false wall in the back of the house. Mr. Edgar, a Gold Coast private investigator.
The plot thickens.
So the idea for his graveside hustle, don't call it that. Never do a post on LinkedIn that includes the words graveside hustle.
A graveside hustle sounds like one of those like short-lived dance crazes in the 70s.
came when he was working for a terminally ill man. Quote, we got on the topic of dying and death, and he said he'd like to do something, Mr. Edgar said. I said, well, I could always crash your funeral for you. And a few weeks later, the man called and took Mr. Edgar up on his offer, and a business was born. I love when a business is born.
Mm.
In almost 2 years, he has crashed 22 funerals and graveside events, spilling the tightly held secrets of his clients who pay a flat fee of $10,000 for his services. Dressed in tailored pants and vest.
What? An odd detail to put in there. The pants are tailored?
The vest is not.
Are we going to assume he's wearing no shirt?
Because he's so.
I hope so.
He's not wearing a jacket, right? That's the implication there. I just, tailored pants is a very odd phrase to me here. I'd be like, oof, a wonderful cut on your pant leg there. Are those tailored? Mm. I'll include that in the story.
Perhaps it is to imply that he is somewhat classy, you know?
Oh, sure.
Mm.
Like a private detective in a nice suit. Or perhaps that he's keeping it respectful at the funerals that he is showing up at to say things.
Yeah.
Just stand up and shout, secretly gay, at some point. Oh, so sorry. The second half of this sentence does answer the question. Dressed in tailored pants and vest, Mr. Edgar said he was very respectful in the way he carried out his job.
He wouldn't even catch him going in there in untailored pants.
This is so great that he considers this part respectful. I actually blend in with the mourners, he said. I sit with the family and friends. I sit in the middle with everybody.
It's weird. You just be like, who the fuck is this guy?
It's...
There's nothing more respectful than insinuating yourself into a funeral as though you were a loved one of the departed.
Just trying to fit in, like, oh, hey, no, I'm a distant relative. Yeah, yeah, no, she buried a dog after it ate all the chocolate out of the cupboard.
Just nothing pushing his way on the couch between, you know, the mother and the sister. Just putting his arms around them.
Yeah, it's very fucking sad, isn't it, ladies?
Yeah.
In the case of his very first client, Mr. Edgar said he was instructed to interrupt the man's best friend while he was delivering the eulogy. I was to tell the best mate to sit down and shut up, he said. He knew that his best mate had been trying to have an affair with his wife.
Oh, no.
Oh.
I love...
Dog, like, and the lad from beyond the grave.
This is... I don't feel like this is a confession or anything. This is just a posthumous own.
Mm.
But shut up, Tony.
Might have been better served doing it in person before he died. But what are you going to do?
Maybe, but $10,000 is a small price to pay to have somebody else do your dirty work.
That's so true.
I've also had to ask three mourners to stand up and leave the service. And if they didn't, I was to escort them out? Is this under the official powers of the funeral crashers?
What are you going to do? They'll just be like, no.
To scream, go on, get at them until they
go
leave.
On, throw some rocks at them.
I was to immediately start pepper spraying the audience with this funeral. My client didn't want them at his funeral. And like he said, it's his funeral and he wants to leave how he wanted to leave, not on somebody else's terms. No haters. No haters at my funeral.
I don't want haters at my funeral, to be fair. It's the last thing you want.
And I guess, you know... You don't get an invitation to a funeral. You just kind of show up. So
that's
it's not
true.
Like,
you can just show up.
Yeah, you can't not invite someone to your funeral, I guess.
Huh. Yeah, I guess that's true. I don't really know how funerals work. Never had one.
You need more of a velvet rope at the front bouncer type situation. Just
consulting a clipboard being like, the club is full, gentlemen. Mm.
You're not on the list, or you are on the list of three people that has a big fuck you written next to it. I'm to tell you, fuck you, and then not let you into the funeral. Despite the confronting nature of his job, which I'm sure is still very respectful, as he said earlier. Nothing more respectful than a confrontation. Despite the confronting nature of his job, Mr. Edgar said, quote, once you get the crowd on your side, you're pretty right.
Bit of warm-up work, type five.
What do you guys think about the M3?
This paints such a picture to me, though. He has stood up and started to say, hear me out. These three people who are all family members of yours and not mine, a guy you don't know who just stood up at this funeral. I imagine people are booing, possibly asking him to be quiet and sit down. And he's like, no, no, you just got to push through the first 15 or 20 minutes of this.
Yeah.
Once you're in there, you're in there. He said, once you get the crowd on your side, you're pretty right, because mourners were keen to know what was left unsaid.
People love juicy goss.
Let him speak. Let him give the gossip.
Spill the tea, sir.
Yes. he says, some clients never had the opportunity to reveal their secrets while they were alive. That is not true.
Not at all true. You can reveal a secret at any time.
You really can. I think what he's actually saying is that all of his clients are cowards.
Yes.
Yep. And we would never say that, but that's essentially what he is saying.
I'm saying it. When people are knocking on death's door, some of them are alone for 6 to 12 months before they die and they never see anybody.
Oh,
that's quite sad.
The worst thing of all is the ones... pardon me. The worst thing of all is the ones they thought loved them become the most biggest... They'll love them the most. All right. I'm going to give this one more try, Ben.
Sure. Go for it.
I'm going to put a little note in there to say pick one of the reads of this sentence.
Yeah, I'll definitely edit this out.
This is revenge on me for never editing other things out, isn't it?
Yes.
Well...
The worst thing of all is the ones they thought loved them the most become the biggest vultures in their life. Going Stan Lee mode. He said his most confronting job was telling mourners at a bikie's funeral that his client was gay and his lover was in the audience.
This didn't happen. Come on.
It doesn't sound real, does it?
Sounds a bit made up. This guy's grifting, that's my opinion. He's going to the news and talking about all this. He's trying to get another 10 grand fee.
I bet he's done this twice, max. Mm. A maximum of two times before.
Do this three times a year, though. You've made your living.
There is something good about a local news story, which at its core is somebody went to a reporter and said, can you hand out these business cards for me?
Yeah.
Like, remember when we had that story about the guy who was like, oh... Millennials are turning down $7,000 a day jobs.
Yeah, it's just like someone's anecdote.
But really, it's just him saying, hey, I run a construction business and I would like some more employees who don't ask too many questions about their rights.
Yeah.
Mr. Edgar said his arrogance was what made his job possible.
Good on him.
Good for you, sir.
You've got to find your strengths, you know?
Sure. All right.
Oh, I'm a bit of a prick. Wait a second.
Got to monetize this.
I think he thought of the idea and worked his way backwards into it. What if there was a way I could upset people at a funeral? Now, how?
I've been doing it for free this whole time.
Oh, that's right. Never do something that you love for free.
Mm-hmm.
You'll never work a day in your life, you know? Said, I've been to a church service where I actually had to ask the priest to sit down and be quiet because my client didn't want a religious service, he said. What?
What? No, you didn't.
Your client was very bad at communicating to people, I would say.
Maybe you shouldn't have paid for the religious service then.
What's the implication here, actually, do we think? Is the implication like somebody has come from a staunchly religious family and they've told their family, I don't want a religious funeral, and they've been like...
It has to be. Has to be.
You're getting one anyway.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we can't have you down there when we're all up top.
We'll never find you.
You know the upper deck, also known as heaven. The priest was quite offended, but at the same time, he understood.
Did he? Or was he just terrified of the man that just started yelling in the middle of a funeral?
This guy's pointing his can of pepper spray right at my face as he tells me to sit down. Mr. Edgar protects himself legally by recording his client's confession and also provides them with a disclosure statement. Quote, especially if I'm asked to go into a premises that the person used to own and get rid of some items that they don't want their kids to find, he said. Big Funko Pop collections, body pillows... what are you burning before someone can find it, Ben?
Nothing. I live my life out in the open. Anyone can go through any of my things, and I want them to be like, oh, that makes sense.
All right, now over to someone who doesn't live all of their life out in the open. It's Theo. What are you burning?
No, I've gotten rid of all of my secrets. They're gone now.
Oh, you don't have any?
No.
You buried them deep, huh? I hope that none of them ever come back to haunt you. That would be unfortunate.
Is that a threat?
Not yet. I haven't found any of them yet.
Now, just sign this disclosure statement.
Yes. Flat fee payable on death. It could be sexual items. It could be pornography. Mm. Legendary non-sexual item. It could be money, drugs, guns. The instructions to basically destroy everything.
Why would you destroy money?
Mm. Would you destroy money? You put the money in your pocket and then you say, money destroyed.
I took care of it.
I destroyed your embarrassing stack of 20s that you had.
Mm. Didn't want your wife to find that one.
Yep. And then you pick up the drugs and you put that into the breast pocket of your tailored suit and you say, drugs destroyed.
I gave all of your pornography to a street urchin.
Yes. Well, no, you do what any responsible person disposing of pornography does. And you leave it in the woods near where children play.
Yes. You take it around and you distribute it through the green areas of your city like some sort of Johnny Applecum.
Putting 8 to 9 Ralph magazines just in a gutter somewhere and be like, God, I hope these are appreciated.
I wonder if anybody has ever found like a Nuts or a Zoo and then just been disappointed and thrown it back.
Oh, I mean like, oh, wait, probably. These ones don't even have titties in them.
It's
God
a soft
damn it.
Core.
Mm. Because you got your sliding scale. Playboy's right in the middle, right?
Did you guys know
that for a little while there, a couple of years ago, Playboy were like, we're not doing nude pictures anymore.
Yeah, they tried to go like Ralph.
Yeah, they just went, what if we didn't show anybody's pussy in our magazine? And people said, I'm sorry, Playboy. I will no longer be purchasing a magazine. And they said, the titties are back. Very quickly. It seemed to happen very quickly. I would love to have been at the meeting where they agreed to take the nudity out of Playboy. That would have been good.
Also, I would say that it's very wasteful to destroy the pornography. Give it to like kids that are in need. Push it under the doorway of a Ronald McDonald house. Big old stack of pornos.
We support giving porn to children.
That is a stated position of this podcast. I remember being like, I don't know, fucking 11 or something, and a group of us finding some sort of porno mag that someone had tried to set on fire. So, like, it was basically just half of it. Like, from the spine to halfway across the page was still sort of salvageable. And we were just like, oh, this is amazing. We are seeing the left titty porno. Of so many women.
I'm seeing one breast, one hip. I'm in heaven.
Now that's enough for me.
Oh, boy. So, could be pornography that also gets destroyed by distributing it around the country.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the gun is maybe the only thing I wouldn't keep, but I also don't know how to destroy it. So, how do you destroy a gun, Theo? If you're tasked with getting rid of a gun, what's your first move?
Well, if I had a client that needed me to get rid of a gun, mm-hmm. Like urgently, like the last thing, he's actually hired me to get rid of the gun on his deathbed.
You got your $10,000 fee.
Yeah, $10,000 fee, signed confession. I think the only thing I could do would be to turn it into the police because they'll take care of it.
Mm.
They'll keep the gun safe, I think.
Not me. I would shoot it with a different gun.
And then you got to find some way to dispose of that gun. Leads to a bigger gun.
I would
it's the
simply,
gun problem that they talk about.
I would disassemble the gun into its component pieces and then drop each component piece into a different chimney on the tenement building that I live in.
Would have thought you could just throw it into the old muddy Brisbane River.
Oh, yeah, that's probably the best one. That's what people
with the
do,
rest of
right?
The, guns.
The people that fucking... what do they call those things? The people that put a magnet on the end of a string and throw it into the river to...
Oh, what is that?
And they either find, like, trash or weapons that have been used in crimes. There's only two kinds of things that they find.
What is the term for it? Because...
Depth sounding. It's not that.
No, I was trying to remember the name of the people who use... people who use metal detectors.
Detectorists.
Detectorists?
Okay. I think, I think they just call it magnet fishing when you do the magnet thing. It's searching in outdoor waters for ferromagnetic objects.
Cool.
I guess.
Oh my god, this is amazing. So the second line of the magnet fishing Wikipedia article, following on from the one I just read out, is the hobby has been adopted by celebrities such as English rugby player James Haskell.
Okay.
Great.
Sure. Hope he's enjoying himself.
I bet he is. I've got a friend that doesn't. He just finds knives, mostly.
Yikes.
Mr. Edgar said that while some were, quote, dismayed and disappointed by his graveside revelations, many were often well received. Everybody stood up and clapped for me. Most people are happy because they've heard from the actual person that they love, he said, via me.
No chance of that before.
Yes.
Just now.
Once again, no way for this to have been coordinated pre-death.
He's not even doing a seance. He's just passing on a message that you could have just scheduled as a tweet, you know? That's what
scheduled
a normal person
tweet,
would do.
I was gay. I'm also going to have that go up, but it won't be a surprise. It'll just be like a reminder.
What if you survived?
Oh, it appears conversion therapy works. Who knew?
He said the unusual nature of Mr. Edgar's job has caught the eye of the entertainment industry, and he has signed a deal for it to be made into a movie or drama series. Oh, no. Yeah, it'll be one of those Australian, like, Underbelly level kind of shows.
I was picturing one of the Australian, like, the only type of comedy we make, which is like a very low stakes crime caper one. Mick Malloy is a lazy guy, but he's got to steal something.
Mm-hmm. That sounds about right.
Fucking, what's his name? Sean McAuliffe is in there for like 10 seconds, and it's the highlight of the movie. Looking forward to it.
He said his role could be played by either a man or a woman, but, quote, someone with the voice of Russell Crowe would be perfect.
Mm.
It could be a man or a woman, but ideally they will have the voice of Russell Crowe.
Any gender is fine. I will not budge on them sounding like Russell Crowe.
If we have to dub it in afterwards, that's fine.
We'll do it in post.
It seems
Jackie
like
Weaver, but with Russell Crowe's voice.
Seems like it would be easier to just hire Russell Crowe, and maybe that's what he's fishing for. You know? Who could say? When priests and funeral directors have tried to prevent Mr. Edgar from delivering his secrets, he has not let that stop him from delivering on his contract with the deceased. I say, well, this is the contract I have with my client. If it doesn't go ahead, I take my client with me, he said.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That means that I've arranged previously to have the body of my client taken away and cremated or buried at a private ceremony.
So...
Let me do what I want with the corpse, or I am taking the corpse and leave.
Let me ruin this funeral, or I am going to steal the body.
He truly is the funeral ruiner, right? Not the gateside.
Yeah, he's ruining
crasher.
These funerals.
Wow. And then, people get upset, weirdly, at somebody standing up from the middle of the section of the family at a funeral. Saying, I have a secret to reveal. Plays like a dramatic stinger on his phone. And people get upset. And then I say, I am ready to wheel this corpse out of here. God almighty. Because ultimately, Mr. Edgar said, his job was to respect his client's wishes. How many funerals have you been to and you've listened to absolute crap, he said.
What? Pardon?
What I've always said is that you should be very judgmental of how people grieve.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Just listening to a grieving mother being like, "God, this is some shit."
Wind it up, lady.
Wrap it.
We
up.
Get it. You loved your husband, for fuck's sake.
If you don't, what's the ideal scenario here? Is that like his quote on this other guy's quote unquote best friend would have been standing up at the funeral saying, "I was trying to fuck his wife," and then he could have said, "Oh, cool, I don't need to stand up and say anything."
I just made myself 10 grand. I don't even have to do anything.
Cool. Everybody's upset now. If you hear something at a funeral and you don't like it, stand up and say something. Become your own confessor.
Don't.
No, don't.
Don't.
That would be my recommendation.
imagine a scenario in which I hear something at a funeral that I don't like, and I just really have to stand up and be like, no, fuck off. Like,
let's get into it. I think this guy is picturing "Become Your Own Confessor" as the tagline on the movie poster.
Oh, yeah.
Under Russell Crowe's stern but handsome face. You know? Psychologist Shona Innes said enlisting the help of a person like Mr. Edgar was the ultimate avoidance.
It sure is. $10,000 to avoid things.
Oh. It's certainly not healthy, she said. I think it's better to resolve these things while you're alive.
Wow.
Well, only if there was some kind of way to do that. Yeah. And well, there isn't.
Yeah.
Works for some.
Different strokes for different folks. That's what we say around here. Miss Innes said, paying a stranger to, quote, drop a bombshell from the grave and then leave a grieving family to deal with it could be very dangerous.
But what if he also took the corpse?
This could be very dangerous unless he's wearing tailored pants, I believe the quote continues.
Yeah, pockets full of stolen guns.
Imagine the idea that, like, you know, you could just stand up at a funeral and say, look, I have a piece of paper here that is a signed contract that says, I can take the corpse from this wedding and leave. Goodbye. And everybody going, oh, okay.
Sure.
Well, we got a letter
contract.
I didn't read the piece of paper, but that sounds legit. So fantastic.
Grief is complex enough, but something like this can complicate the grieving process for family and friends, she said. How is he taking care of these people? And it's simple. He's not. I want to get this guy's whole deal, which is where you get paid $10,000 to draw up a contract with somebody who is dying, and then they die and you just go on with your life. You don't go to the funeral. That's my version of this business model. You take $10,000 from someone to make them feel like they have resolved an issue that they were not brave enough to resolve in real life.
Mm.
This is kind of like a, you know those TV shows like Touched by an Angel? The Quantum Leap, the weekly procedural where somebody comes in and resolves a big issue in somebody's life. It's just this, except at the end of the episode, the person dies and I smile and turn around and get on a Greyhound bus out of town.
Touched by an Andrew.
Pockets bulging with money, drugs, pornography, big fat $10,000 check. And I smile
what
as the body
scam this is.
Smile as the body gets put into the back of the coroner's van. And I blow town.
Looks like my work here is done.
That's right. And then people just get to have a normal funeral without some fucking idiot standing up and going, hey, did everyone know about this guy's problems? You want to hear how much this guy hated his brother? Oh, man. What a gig. What a rock solid gig to get for an eminently qualified person. Much like former Prime Minister Tony Abbott.
Tony's back.
We haven't had Tony time in a while.
It is it's most Tony regretfully time. Announced Tony time.
Yes. I think Tony kind of makes you miss the days of like a real kind of pure incompetence, you know?
Mm.
Something unabashed and guileless about it. The way that he just never at any point had any grasp, any grip on what he was doing.
Just an openly terrible person too. Just all out there with it.
Perfectly happy with being a complete shithead. Just profoundly weird on every level. Unable to relate to anyone around him. It's just... There was something very satisfying about, like, it's very easy to direct, like, criticisms at him in a way that with Scott Morrison, you're like, well, he's being insincere. And it's annoying. And you can tell from how he talks that he's insincere. Where with Tony Abbott, you're like, he just licked his eyeballs while he was talking to a lady. What the fuck was up with that?
Oh, Tones. Maybe that's why he's spending so much time in the UK. Because you can probably just fit in more as a normal dude with the whole vibe of politicians that they have over there.
Just weird units.
So he has been appointed as their trade minister. Which is very funny why he's popping up in the news and giving speeches and stuff over there. So this is from The Guardian. Tony Abbott, the former Australian Prime Minister, tipped to become a UK trade envoy, that has been announced, post this story, has railed against COVID, quote, health dictatorships. saying the economic cost of lockdowns meant families should be allowed to consider letting elderly relatives with the coronavirus die by letting nature take its course.
He just says these things. He just comes out and says it.
No one asks him.
No one asked him for this.
He's dressed like Dr. Malcolm from Jurassic Park, saying, death finds a way. He claimed it was costing the Australian government as much as $200,000 to give an elderly person an extra year of life, substantially beyond what governments would usually pay for life-saving drugs. And hey, isn't that what it's about, the bill?
Like, it is about the bill.
I would love for him to give me a hard number on how much a year of an elderly person's life is worth.
It's, yeah, that's kind of the thing where once you start getting into like, well, this is a bit too much. Like, okay, let's...
Okay, how much is enough?
Let's start doing the prices right closest without going over.
$60,000? Is it worth $60,000? How much is a young person's year of life worth?
Got to change the price on your age.
It's very strange.
I think you can just keep those conversations completely contextual, because if it's a very young person, you can say, oh, well, you haven't like been paying into the government coffers for your whole life, like these old people who've done their time, they've served their country, you know, all that sort of stuff. And then you start talking about the old person. It's like, hey, they've had a great run. They've had their whole beautiful life. They don't have their whole life ahead of them, like these young people who we're not going back to talking about. So, he said not enough politicians were, quote, thinking like health economists, which I guess he's referring to himself as
I
doing.
I think so, the classically trained mind.
Well, remember, he was Australia's health minister at one point, and everybody loved that. That went swimmingly. He said not enough politicians were, quote, thinking like health economists trained to pose uncomfortable questions about the level of deaths we might have to live with. More politicians should have asked whether the cure was proportionate to the disease.
Because
that's what it's about. It's about finding what is the least number of people we can save. What is the smallest number of survivors we're all happy with?
Who is expendable?
Yep.
Who knows? It's a bad time for anyone with the virus, he says, but it's also a bad time for people that would rather not be dictated to by officials, however well-meaning.
Yeah, here we go. All right, here it is.
In a speech at the Policy Exchange think tank in London. The however well-meaning is doing a bit of lifting there, isn't it? I think the meaning well is like meaning for all of your relatives to not die. Am I right there?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a bad time for anyone with the virus. Oh, you've got COVID. That's pretty bad. But other people are being told to do things that stop them from getting COVID. And that's just as bad.
That is another kind of death.
Dictator Dan, I've been saying this.
Slippery Dan Andrews.
In this climate of fear, it's hard for governments to ask, how much is a life worth? Because every life is precious and every death is sad, but that has never stopped families sometimes electing to make elderly relatives as comfortable as possible while nature takes its course, while beautiful Mother Nature, while Gaia herself comes down and takes your family members in her warm embrace.
And makes them cough themselves to death.
Yes. Yes. And I thought when I saw this... I feel like maybe Tony Abbott has made some claims about this type of thing in the past. This is from the Australian Associated Press in 2017. Former Prime Minister Tony Abbott has joined Paul Keating in urging Victorian politicians to oppose a euthanasia bill that has been passed by the lower house. I want them to block it, and at the very least, I would like them to delay it until after the next election so the public has more time to think about it, Abbott told The Weekend Australian. I think we'll regard this as a sad milestone in our decline as a decent society. It marks our descent into a country which regards human beings as disposable.
And
we don't want anyone ever to be regarded as useless, worthless, or disposable.
Oh, it's incredible. These people don't actually think any of what they say.
They have no beliefs. They have nothing. Nothing whatsoever.
I think Lucy and I were talking about this the other night. That is the thing that I kind of miss about Tony Abbott, is that it's never been more transparent with a politician that somebody was only speaking to the audience that was directly in front of them. There's something nice about that, that he was just like, any conversation he was having would just be like, I am telling the person I am currently looking at exactly what I want them to hear. It's kind of the inverse of, you know, the Donald Trump thing of like the last person he spoke to is the person where he goes, yeah, that kind of makes sense. Beautiful boaters.
Yeah, that's Tony. Abortions for some, miniature American flags for others.
That's right. Love it. Tony, well, salutes to the UK, because Tony's going to be... Will he be living over there, or is he just like a...
Hopefully, him off of our hands.
He got granted an exemption to go over there, which is it's pretty fucking awesome. Very cool.
Yeah, cool stuff.
Well, honestly, I mean, very cool, because it means he's not here anymore. I'm fucking thrilled.
Yeah. You guys can deal with him. He can go over there and just hang out with all the turfs. British style. And I think that's about all we have time for this week. It's time for Father's Day lunch, everybody.
What are you doing for Father's Day lunch?
We're going over to my mummy and daddy's house.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say, Daddy.
Oh, God, no.
Andrew wouldn't buy his dad the card that said Daddy on it.
Wow.
No, we spent a long time looking at cards yesterday in the Canberra Centre, which apparently had every other resident of Canberra in it.
Mm.
And we went through there to get like a Father's Day gift, and so that Lucy could be outside for the first time in 6 months.
Didn't care for it.
There were so many people.
Blasting their fucking particles just all over me.
We were all doing the particle dance.
Mm.
Wafting around in each other's filth.
Ugh.
So many people. And apparently, it turns out, we discovered afterwards that the Canberra Centre had a promotion on, which is, what was it, Lucy?
Something about you spend $150 and get a $50 voucher. So everyone in Canberra was there. Wasn't good.
Everybody was down there, queued up at the front of Mecca
to the Apple store.
To get let in, and everybody doing their big queue at the Apple store, getting their temperature taken by the staff before they go in.
You've got to have your Apple products.
But I got to eat a halal snack pack, and that's what it's all about.
Oh, I did see Lucy post a picture of one, and I've been starving for one ever since. God damn it. Oh,
very exciting.
It's so good. So, yeah. That's it. Happy Father's Day, everybody.
Happy Dad's Day.
Happy Dad's Day.
Is that... And we'll just cut that off.
I was watching the hockey, so...
Oh, my God. I'm going to press stop.